listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
All right, and it is another edition of the Forza Podcast. It's your boy, Marsh Thomas. As always, I am joined by my co-host and my wonderful producer, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, how are we? How are we, my man?
I'm good, man. My day job is kicking my butt, but I am good.
That's good. I mean, you're working hard, right?
Yeah. How you doing though?
It's cold here, bro. It's like it's been like zero the entire week. So I'm whatever. I'm in my Dwayne Wade jersey right now, letting the guns show. Just got back from another arms workout. But I'm just eating some candy right now and ready to get after, man. We got two great guests for you guys today and I'm ready for a good show, Jordan.
Oh, dude, I think it's going to be a great show. So first thing, one of our listeners, at Cuban Kane on Twitter, requested that we show some love to the baseball team. So, I mean, I don't follow it. I know you do a little bit, Marsh, but we got the number one team in the nation coming up on a series against Florida. Do you have anything to add to that?
The Gators are ranked number two. We're ranked number one. It's absolutely huge. I know you don't watch baseball, but I recommend you watch this weekend just because it's a huge series. I think we have A-Rod throwing out the first pitch tomorrow night, and then we have Mike Piazza throwing out the first pitch on Saturday night. So it's going to be a huge series. I know that all tickets are sold out for all three games, so that's awesome. I'm just praying that this team lives up to the expectations, so maybe I can make a trip to Omaha.
Yeah, no, that'd be fun. And, yeah. You know, I want to watch because it'd be really good to see us beat some Gators, but, you know, I don't know if I could handle tuning in for a different sport if we fail. So
I know.
Our football program gives me enough strife. I don't know if I need another sport to do that to me.
That's a very, very – that's a good point. I'm just in, like, year-round anguish just because all my teams let me down all the time. But
I feel that. I feel that, man.
I woke up today in kind of like a – not an honorary mood, but kind of like a mischievous mood. Just I wanted to piss, like, some Canes fans off. And so, like, this Twitter guy – was asking everyone what our record is going to be going into week six. And I first said 4-1, and then I said 2-3, yeah. Just to like make some people mad. And I was successful. It was Canes fans are just, some are just so sensitive. So
passionate, it's just so dude. Very passionate fan base. I love it and I hate it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you can't, yeah.
Well, and you got our future guest is going to be on in a little bit. You got him riled up too, which I'm sure he's a master of.
I am so excited for our second guest tonight, and I'm very excited for our first guest. We got Jeremy Branham from Houston Sports Radio. We're going to talk a little bit about De'Aaron King. And so, Jordan, let's get him on.
Okay. I'll dial him up right now.
Hello.
Are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Jeremy, how are you, man?
Pretty good. How are you?
Pretty good. So we have Jeremy Branham from Houston Sports Radio joining the Fours Up podcast today. We're going to talk a little bit about De'Aaron King and everything like that. So, Jeremy, again, thank you for joining us.
Oh, no problem. Happy to do it. Always enjoyed De'Aaron King, so happy to talk about what kind of football player he is.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, first off, I'm going to switch to baseball really quickly because I'm a diehard Yankees fan. And I just wanted
to tell me you're going to do this.
I just wanted to get your opinion on what's going on with your Astros right now.
I mean, it's one of the biggest scandals in Major League Baseball history. I think that's safe to say. The impact of it is questionable. I think that it's a fair conversation to have as well. Like, how many teams were doing this? That's something that I don't know if we'll ever know the answer to. The Astros broke the memo. There's no argument against that. Like, I'm a diehard Houston fan, I'm a diehard Astros fan. But the Astros didn't listen to the memo that Robert Manfred sent to every team in Major League Baseball in the middle of September. The Astros played the final 16 regular season games without knowing about the memo because the front office didn't relay the message. And that's to the Astros organization's fault. And then, you know, they said that they used the scheme whenever they could in the playoffs. So that's kind of where I stand on it.
Okay, okay. What do you, I mean, do you think, like, what do you think is going to end up happening?
Well, I think what's happened is what's going to happen. I don't think Manfred's going to go back on, you know, anything that he disciplined everybody that was involved in terms of the commissioner's report. He gave immunity to the players. So the players, there's no way that they can be retroactively punished. Manfred gave immunity to the Red Sox. We'll see what happens whenever that report comes out. I don't think it's going to be as bad as what was put on the Astros. But, you know, look, they find Jim Crane the maximum amount that the MLB Constitution allows to be fined to an owner. They gave a very strict penalty in terms of the draft. Losing two first-rounders and two second-rounders is a pretty big deal. And yeah. Look, I think one of the best managers in the last 3 years, he's won 100 games in the last three seasons, has been to two World Series, won one of them. He's fired. The Astros are without one of the best managers in baseball. Jeff Luhnow, I've argued, could be called the greatest general manager of all time. He took a perennial 100-loss team that was getting 0.0 TV ratings. They had one of the worst attendances in baseball, that had the worst farm system in baseball when he took over, and he won the World Series in a pretty short time. And whenever you consider all of that, I think he was one of the best GMs we've ever seen in baseball history. He's no longer in the organization, rightfully so. So yeah. I believe that the Astros have been punished a lot more than what people think. And I get it. Like, they think that the Astros cheated and they didn't listen to the memo. They ended up winning a World Series. So I get the uproar, believe me. But I also believe the Astros have been punished.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that's a great point. But I know I just had to ask because, you know, I'm still butthurt about the 2017 ALCS. So I just had to ask, man.
The Yankees could have scored some more runs in those four games that they lost now.
Yeah, I know, man. We just couldn't hit Verlander. I remember it vividly.
You should have took his signs.
Well, my dad is a huge Astros fan, and so you know, them giving him a World Series ring, you know, to cheer for, and, you know, made me happy, so I don't care. I'll take it. But anyways, Jeremy, shifting gears, we were able to see on Twitter, you know, the passing of D'Eriq King's dad, Eric King, who I didn't know much about until his passing, but it seems like he's a pretty legendary figure in local Houston high school football. I mean, is there anything that you know about that you can shed some light on for us?
You know, I don't know a whole lot. The Houston Chronicle beat writer for the University of Houston actually traveled to Dallas to cover the Houston basketball SMU game last weekend. I believe that was on a Saturday. That was Saturday. And we were about 5 minutes from airtime, and Joseph Duarte is his name. He came over and he told me that D'Eriq King's dad passed away. And I mean, I was stunned. I couldn't believe it. He has been a pretty focal name in the city of Houston, and of course was a big name around the University of Houston community whenever they talked about D'Eriq King leaving. So, I mean, I was shocked. I felt really bad for D'Eriq King, kind of watching him grow up through his high school days and turning into being a very good collegiate quarterback. I hurt for D'Eriq when I heard that news. So I don't know a whole lot behind it, but I just felt terrible for D'Eriq.
Yeah. Well, yeah, our condolences from the podcast to the King family, and, you know, I'm sure all three of us, you know, feel that same way, and it's just tough to hear, man.
Yeah, it is tough to hear, and, you know, Derek's going through changes in his life right now, right? I mean, none that are as important as losing a parent, losing a father, but, you know, it's never a good time to happen, but the transition that D'Eriq is going through right now, I wish it was any time but now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and like Jordan said, all thoughts and prayers to the King family. And so let's get into D'Eriq a little bit, Jeremy. And so we're starting right off the bat. How surprised were you when D'Eriq decided to transfer to Miami? Because as a Hurricane fan, I knew that King was planning to go into the portal and everything, but I didn't think we had a snowball's chance in landing him. What were your thoughts? I guess first when King decided to enter the portal, and then where did you think he would end up, and how surprised were you when he ended up in Miami?
You know, I don't think anybody, if they're being truthful with you, would say that they were that surprised that D'Eriq King tried the transfer portal. Like whenever the decision was made, whoever's decision that it was, whenever the Cougars lost to Tulane after the fourth game of the season, they started 1-3, and we got the news that King and Keith Corbin were gonna sit out the rest of the season in red shirt, And of course, Dana Holgorsen had been holding back some guys who had some eligibility left to redshirt in an effort to try to get the roster, the overall roster, older going forward, and kind of a reloading, rebuilding type of year, which makes some sense. You look at the Cougars roster, and they were one of the youngest teams in the conference, if not the nation. So the plan was he wants to play with an older roster. And it was shocking that it was King in the mix, though, because, you know, he's your superstar. He was, you know, on some dark horse Heisman candidates to start the season. Then all of a sudden, at the snap of a finger, four games later, he's going to redshirt. So, like, it was always a conversation the rest of the season going into the offseason amongst Cougar fans. You know, what's King going to do? And it was a, you know, it was a pretty healthy debate. You know, a lot of people were truthers about it and felt like, oh, no, he's staying. You know, he had the press conference, says he's not going anywhere. He's going to be here. Other people, you know, weren't so optimistic about it. Now, I would say it was probably a 50-50 split within the fan base. I think even the biggest truthers, though, probably had in the back of their mind that it was possible, right? Like, you know, it's the college football world we live in. If a player's not happy or if a player wants to move on, that's the quick thing to do. And they have the right to do that. So I wasn't surprised. I don't think most of the fan base was that surprised. Now, I'll be honest with you. I was surprised Miami was the top target eventually for De'Ara King. You know, I thought that, you know, Kendall Briles was a place that he'd kind of want to reconnect because he had such a sensational junior year when Kendall Briles was the OC at Houston. So that to me was kind of my uneducated guess. So I was a little surprised that he ended up in Miami, just not knowing a whole lot about the new Miami situation.
All right. So this question is more about De'Ara King as a person. We had a lot of locker room issues last season, especially at the QB position. You know, both quarterbacks, it started for us, Jaren Williams and N'Kozie Perry, at some point or another have been suspended in their careers. There's work ethic questions, playbook questions, overall maturity questions. There was an article that came out that said that, you know, there was some drug issues in the quarterback's room. What kind of human are we getting with De'Ara King? And if you could tell us a little bit about the leadership and just the type of person that he is and what we can expect this season.
He is a very good leader. He's not the most vocal leader. I actually saw De'Ara King kind of grow up a little bit in his football career. I remember seeing him when he was playing in Manville High School. I would call some local playoff games in the Houston area, and Manville, the high school he went to, was always a power in Class 5A, and, you know, would make deep and right. And De'Ara King was putting up, you know, record-shattering numbers in Manville, and I always was really impressed with him as the player. And then as the more I started to cover them in high school, I asked his coach, Kurt Martin, who I believe now is a quarterback's coach at Syracuse, I think. You might want to fact check me on that. But I remember talking to Kurt Martin, and Kurt Martin says he's the best leader that he's ever coached. I mean, this was a Houston high school coach that had some really good powerhouse programs for a really long time. And he had seen some really good Division I players. And whenever he said that, you know, I believed it. And then whenever he got to the University of Houston, he was a selfless player, you know, played some receiver because he wanted to play. He wanted to win. One of the, you know, most competitive people that you'll be around. And his leadership style is, you know, it's more lead by example. He's not going to get into too many people's faces and say, look, follow me, jump on my back, I'll show you the way. But he does have that quiet confidence about him that, you know, he's going to do it. He's going to be the leader. He's going to be the quarterback. And if you don't follow him, then you might have a problem. But he's not going to be somebody that's going to be vocal, but he is going to be a quality leader and do it with the actions on the football field.
That's awesome to hear. Everything that I've heard, I mean, it sounds like he's a great leader and he's going to be a great addition to this Miami locker room, which has had some problems in the past. Let me ask you this, Jeremy. So we just hired Rhett Lashley, the offensive coordinator who was at SMU in Houston's same conference as Houston. How do you think De'Ara will fit into Rhett Lashley's offense?
It's a good question. Because he had Shane Buechele this year, who he's got a better arm. I would say that, you know, De'Ara's a really good college football player. The one critique I would have on De'Ara King as a quarterback is the accuracy. And there's certain things that go into that. I mean, you know, he's not the biggest quarterback, tough for him to see over the offensive line. So he's not the best thrower on platform, staying in the pocket, being able to go through the routes and going through the route trees and going through his progressions. You know, he's kind of at his best whenever he can improvise a little bit, roll out, get him in some one-on-one matchups where he can tuck it and run. You know, we didn't see a whole lot this year of that from SMU because Shane Buechele is not, you know, the most athletic quarterback. But you look back into some of Brett Lashley's previous stops, you know, he had guys like that. So I don't think it's, you know, I wouldn't say it's a bad fit at all. I don't know if it's the most optimal fit, but I wouldn't say it's a bad fit.
Okay, you know, you're actually one step ahead of me because I was going to ask you if you had to critique Derek in any way, what would it be? Because, I mean, we've only heard, and we're not trying to be, you know, negative at all, but what we've heard as Hurricanes fans and covering this program, you know, we've just heard just so many great things because, I mean, his 2018 season speaks for himself, you know, 36 passing touchdowns, 14 rushing touchdowns. I was just wondering if there was anything bad about Derek's play or anything to critique, but I mean, you already answered that.
Well, yeah, he's not the perfect quarterback. You know, he's not somebody that is going to go in the top three rounds of an NFL draft. He's if I'm going to be very critical, and again, look, I love Derek King. I think he's a great college quarterback. He's not the biggest, you know, he's not very tall. That makes it tough for him to, you know, see over the offensive line. It is what it is. I know that it's modern football and, you know, shorter, smaller quarterbacks have more success now than they ever had. But one way to do that is get him out of the pocket, have him rolling around, make him a threat in the running game, which he is. I mean, he is an electric runner. He can score on you pretty quickly if he beats the spy or anything like that. But if you are going to critique Derek and you look at these four games this year that he had with Houston, and it probably is too small of a sample size to give a really fair and accurate grade, is that he would be a little inconsistent. He would have some tough times going through the progressions. He struggled with the deep ball this year, which was weird because his junior year he was really good with the deep ball. And I think a lot of it is that he dealt with a lot of offensive coordinators in a short amount of time. One thing that's not football related so much is the injury concerns. Like Derek's been banged up over the course of his career. He missed the last few games of his junior season. He was healthy in all four games this year, but even in his first couple of years at Houston, he had some knocks and some things he was trying to play through. He had some fluke injuries in the offseason. So if I'm going to critique Derek's quarterback ability, the accuracy at times can be a little erratic, and you hope and you keep your fingers crossed that he can avoid injury.
All right, perfect. So let's see. I had a question. Crap. Oh, yeah. Sorry. My bad.
No problem.
So is there any reason for Miami fans to be concerned when it comes to Derek King playing in a Power 5 conference, a Power 5 schedule, you know, that type of stuff? Should we be concerned or are you pretty confident in him when it comes to that?
You know, it's tough, you know, because I think that the American Conference at the top of the league can play with the big boys. You know, the University of Houston a few years ago and Tom Herman was around and Greg Ward was around. You know, they beat Florida State in the Peach Bowl. We've seen what UCF has done over the last few years. I think at the very top that the American can play with some of the better teams in college football. But it's the week in, week out, right? It's the week in, week out of going up against 4 or 5-star recruits each and every week. And I don't think from an ability standpoint that Derek will have any problem. It's more to the thing I was saying earlier about the injuries. You know, can he sustain the hits week in, week out? And that's one thing that, you know, Holgorsen was trying to do with him this year is he wanted him to run a little bit less because he wanted him to make it through an entire season because he's not big. You know, he's not a big kid. And, you know, you don't want your quarterback taking a bunch of licks every single game because they can't make it through the entire season if they're doing that. And he's never done that in his career. So I would be critical of that if I'm looking at it from a Miami perspective is you want him to be dynamic. You want him to be electric. You don't want to take that away from him. But at the same time, if he's taking those hits each and every week, especially in the ACC, can he get through the whole season? You know, that's a tall order for Derek.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, he definitely is a shorter guy. And to close it all off, Jeremy, and again, we thank you for coming on. We just wanted to ask about your Texans and how do you see our boy Duke Johnson fitting in? I know he had a solid year with the Texans this year, but how do you see him with the future?
Yeah, I like Duke Johnson a lot. I host a radio show in Houston. We had Duke on as a guest right before their playoff loss against Kansas City. And he's one of the more entertaining guys. I think he's kind of one of the more laid back guys too. He's kind of you know, he's an NFL star almost, but he's, you know, he's pretty calm. He's pretty chill, I guess you can say. Yeah. I like Duke Johnson's game a lot. I think he's one of the best third down running backs in the NFL. I think if you asked Houston Texans fans, they wish Bill O'Brien used him a little bit more because he can be pretty dynamic at times. And a lot of folks felt that he should get more touches on this offense and didn't. It'll be interesting going into next season, though, because Carlos Hyde's a free agent. He ran for 1,000 yards this season. There's been some talks that maybe the Texans go younger at the running back spot. You know, they let Hyde walk. Maybe they draft a running back in the middle rounds that can share the workload for Duke Johnson. But if I had to guess, you know, if Hyde's leaving, I think that's more work for Duke.
Hey. I'd love to see it, man. He was my favorite player. Like, he's probably my favorite Miami Hurricane of all time. And I've just been dying to see him get a bigger workload in the NFL just to see what happens. I know he's smaller and he's kind of, you know, on the physical side, he's perfect for a third down back. But I'd just like to see him get, you know, closer to 15 touches a game and just, you know, see if he can succeed in that role.
I do, too. I really would like to see that because there were times this year where the Texans offense could really use more Duke Johnson, you know, whether it's out of the backfield or catching passes because he's such a good receiver out of the backfield that I felt he could be used. The word around the streets is that he's not the greatest, you know, pass blocker, picking up coverages, things like that. And that's been a concern for the Texans. Let's face it. Yeah. Deshaun Watson nearly got killed a couple of years ago. They got better last year. But, you know, they've been very focused on protecting Deshaun. And the word on the street is that Duke's not great as a pass protector. But if he can catch passes out of the backfield, get rid of the ball quick, you don't have to worry about that, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, the Texans have had some luck with Miami Hurricanes. You know, you had Andre Johnson there for a long time. So let's hope Duke is the same way. But, Jeremy, we thank you so much for coming on, man. It was a great interview. And just thanks again.
Yeah, Andre Johnson was at the Fertitta Center last night watching some Houston Cougar basketball. I see him around all the time at Texans practice, too. Texans love Deshaun, I should say Andre, not Deshaun. Texans love Andre Johnson. I know Miami fans do, too. Thanks for having me. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy.
That was a good interview. Jeremy, he knows what he's talking about.
All right, guys.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man, I loved it. That was cool.
Yeah, I mean, just gave us kind of a real inside look at what De'Aaron King thrives at. Obviously, there's a lot, but I mean, I think it's important to talk about because every player has struggles, and we've just been hyping him up so much. I mean, I think it's fair to go into some of the weaknesses.
Yeah, no, I think it's good because you know as Miami fans, we kind of get caught up in the whole like feedback loop of hype. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's where some of the delusion comes from, is that it's all hype, constant 24/7 hype.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm glad we took it that direction and just kind of things to watch out for. And clearly he was a big fan of De'Aaron King, so that's good. Mm-hmm. But also it's nice to you know, wrap our heads around the fact that it's not going to be a perfect season, even if he does play great.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I know we got a guest coming on in about 15-20 minutes. What do you say we answer some of those mailbag questions?
Yeah, let's do it. I'll pull them up right now. All right, so the first one is, I like this question a lot. This is from Adrian Bistolfi, a friend of the podcast and frequent mailbag contributor. If you could drop yourself in any one moment of Kane's history that you haven't already witnessed, what would it be?
That's a good question.
I think
you go first.
Okay, so for me, it would be that like 6-season span from 87 to 91, where we won 87, 89, 91. You know, and then there was a few national championship losses in there too, or, you know, just other high season finishes. I mean, just such a dominant era for Miami and even college football. I mean, that has to be one of the better runs in all time, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if I had to pick one moment, I have three answers. I would pick the 84 Orange Bowl against Nebraska. Just because I mean, that's where it all started. That's when 31-30, we win our first national championship with Howard, and it's just the most important moment in program history. Second, I would go 1989 against Notre Dame when they were undefeated, reigning national champions, and we had them in the Orange Bowl. It was a regular season game, but everything I've heard about that game is just very historic, and I heard the Orange Bowl was louder than ever. And then the third game, I would pick the 2000 FSU game, wide right number three, when they were also coming in as defending national champions. We hadn't beaten Florida State in like 6 years. They were ranked number one. We were ranked seventh, and Dorsey hits Jeremy Shockey for that touchdown, and then they missed the field goal wide right, and just one of those games you wish you were there for, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean, I've never seen any of my teams win a national championship or a NBA Finals national championship, Super Bowl, anything. So,
you poor thing.
I know, man. I'm tearing up just thinking about it.
The Jazz have kind of screwed you over.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm resigned to. I've kind of lost interest in the MLB and I was a big Denver Broncos fan growing up, and then I kind of.
Ew.
I stopped caring about him when I was probably 10 years old. It's just been down to the Utah Jazz and Miami Hurricanes for the last 16 years, and that's gone very horribly for me.
I'm sorry. I should have.
No, you're fine. It's true, man. It's true. The Jazz are one of the more tortured fan bases of the NBA, and, like, they've been way better than Miami has. For the last 15 years. Like, way better.
Wait, whoa, 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 wait, 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 wait. Whoa. What are you talking about? We've won three championships.
No, I'm talking about the Hurricanes, man.
Okay.
I'm just saying, like, being a Utah Jazz fan versus a Miami Hurricanes fan, it's been much easier being a Jazz fan in the last 15 years. Which says something. Because they are one of the worst, like, most tortured, you know, just awful luck fan bases in NBA history.
Yeah. I mean, but at least they give you a taste of success.
Yeah, right? I love getting bounced in the second round by getting swept. It's great.
By Rockets.
Yeah, I love just getting eliminated in the first or second round of the playoffs every year. And then, well, now I've in the last year and a half, I've been cultivating my fanhood of the Buffalo Bills.
Oh my god! Which is
probably the most tortured fan base in NFL history. So yeah. I know how to pick them, dude. If I choose a Cowboy team, that's a very bad sign.
The Cowboys have tortured me very thoroughly. So
yeah. I mean, they had that good run in the '90s, but since then that would be pretty tough, you know.
It sucks because I'm a Cowboys fan, a Hurricanes fan, and a Yankee fan, and they all were great. Right up until the moment I was born or, like, started watching sports.
Yep.
Like, I've been screwed. Like, the Yankees have won World Series since 2000, pretty much since I started watching baseball. The Cowboys, I hate them so much. I hate them because they've tortured me so much. And it's the same way with the Hurricanes.
Yep.
I'm getting worked up again. This is what happens. I get worked up.
I feel it. And now I'm getting just, like... I'm getting emotionally invested in the Bills, like, more and more by the day. And I mean, their claim to fame is losing 4 Super Bowls in a row. So,
hey, 2 to my Cowboys. So,
yeah. Oh, so that brings us to our next mailbag question, which was very important from Fours Up podcast contributor Mike McCoy. How bad will the Cowboys suck this season?
Okay, Mike. Shut up. Hold on. I'm grabbing a Twizzler really quickly.
Oh, dude. Oh, that came across my Twitter feed. I knew I had to ask.
Yeah, I'm sure Mike's giggling about it.
You want to talk to the Cowboys? Because I got an opinion.
Every year I just assume we're going 8-8 or 9-7. So. Yeah.
Well, if you guys pay I can't even – Dak Prescott, if you pay Dak Prescott and having paid Ezekiel Elliott, you guys are going to go 8-8 for a really long time. That's a lot of money to two guys that don't move the needle enough to win a Super Bowl, in my opinion.
Zeke does. Dak does not.
Zeke is good. But, I mean, he's not like Derrick Henry, where he's going to put the whole team on his back and carry to the AFC Championship game.
Because we don't run him enough.
Yeah, no, but, I mean, how many running backs are that good anyways?
But if we gave Ezekiel Elliott, the only reason that they give Derrick Henry the ball 40 times a game is because Ryan Tannehill couldn't hold my jock strap.
Dude, well, he's AFC Championship quarterback Ryan Tannehill, so put some respect there.
Ew.
Dude, I'm just saying. Like, my sister-in-law is a big Cowboys fan, and she doesn't agree with me, but I'm just like, ooh, you better not pay a whole bunch of slightly above-average dudes a whole bunch of money, because that does not turn into wins. You can ask my Utah Jazz that question. Overpaying above-average guys that aren't superstars to stay around, that does not turn into championships, I can promise you that.
Yeah, if we pay Dak Prescott what he's asking for, I am going to, like, march to Jerry Jones' office and just demand 15 years of my life back.
Yeah, dude. Speaking of, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But, I mean, speaking of Jazz, like, they got this Rudy Gobert coming up on the Supermax he's eligible for because he's won Defensive Player of the Year twice in a row. Yeah. Can you imagine? I love Rudy. I think he's really good. I think he impacts the game as like a top 15, top 20 player in terms of impact. But can you imagine paying him like $47 million a year or however much it is?
Like, no, I can't.
That's the same thing that the Cowboys are going to do with Dak if they pay him elite money. Is you're paying a non-elite guy elite money, and it just screws over your whole franchise.
Yeah, I'm if the Yankees don't win a World Series this year, I don't know what I'll do. I don't know what will happen. What's the next question?
Okay, next question. Man, my phone's blowing up right now. Sorry, I'm a little discombobulated. Okay. Which incoming freshman will have the biggest contribution this season? Oh, this is from LaVon Ponder, our guy.
Hey, friend of the program.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah, absolutely. One of our best friends, LaVon Ponder.
Yeah.
Him and Brad Kyer are two best friends.
My very good friend that used to play for the Miami Hurricanes.
Yes, our very good friend, LaVon.
Yeah. No, we love you, LaVon. Thanks for coming on last week and let's see. Go ahead, Marsh. Who's the biggest contribution from a freshman?
I'm saying Jalen Knighton. Okay. Just because I'm not very confident in our running backs like staying healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, Chaney's already experiencing health issues. Robert Burns always has health issues. And yeah. I think Jalen Knighton is going to thrive in Rhett Lashley's offense. And I really do think – I wrote an article about this a few weeks ago. But Jalen Knighton, I mean, I think he's just a better fit for Don Chaney or than Don Chaney, and not like discrediting Don Chaney at all. I think he's going to be great at Miami, but I think, with him battling, injuries and everything, I think Knighton, we're going to see him a lot this year.
Yeah. So Knighton would be in my top two, might even be one, but just for the sake of being different, I'll go with my other choice. And that's Avante Williams, because we're going to need him to play some corner and, I'm worried about our corners, man. I'm really worried about our corners. We're going to have to take five, like in this next recruiting class, we're going to have to give out five scholarships to corners.
Yeah.
And that's because we don't have any bodies. So I think we need Avante Williams to play corner and to be good from day one this season.
And I think he will. I think he will.
I hope so, but I'm going to go with that. But, I mean, if you hadn't said Jalen Knighton, I probably would have said him, because I want to echo everything he said. He's a great fit. I think he could be huge for Rhett Lashley.
The Rooster.
Yeah, I love it, man. All right, next question. is from Casey Nevajay, another frequent mailbag friend of the pod. So he says, who is your dream guest to have on this podcast? And each of us can only pick one person.
That's not fair. Let's do top three instead.
He specifies only one person.
Well, it's our podcast. We can do what we want. All right. Let's do top three, because I can't just pick one.
Okay, that's fine with me.
You?
That'd be tough.
Yeah, exactly. All right, top three, you go.
Okay, would you mind going first? I'm trying to send out a message real quick.
Okay, fine. Let's see. Braxton Berrios.
You mean your very best friend, Braxton Berrios?
My very best friend, Braxton Berrios.
You know, I actually heard that you two are related. Is that true?
We have the same birthday. That's I don't. I'm not here to. We might be related. We may in fact be related. But yeah, we're just best friends. It's just whatever. I would also I want Ja'Cory Harris to come on this podcast.
Okay.
I
hope if he does come on the podcast that he's never looked at my Twitter feed before.
Yeah, same. I've had to delete some. third would probably have to be, and this would be like, I would want to, like, if we were ever in Florida and we could have like a face-to-face interview with him,
uh-huh.
I would want Coach Jimmy Johnson.
Oh, dang.
My other best friend.
That was one of my three for sure. So, of course, Jimmy, dude.
I love Jimmy Johnson so very much. I love him.
I know people, like, I don't know. To me, he is the embodiment of the Miami Hurricanes program.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's
the GOAT.
Like, he's like the swaggiest 70-something-year-old dude of all time.
His hair is perfect.
Yeah.
He wears flip-flops.
Oh, dude. Jimmy is of course on there. So if we could get a very candid interview, like lots of truth, you know, stuff that like I don't know. If we could get a very candid and open and honest interview, I would want to have Mark Richt on here.
Oh, Mark Richt, yeah, him.
Just because I don't know. I'd be really interested to hear everything that went down during his 3 years. Because, I mean, I've been thinking a lot about it. I'm going to do some stuff on my blog about it. But, I mean, his three-year tenure was kind of an aberration in the last 15 years in that, I mean, we had really, really good teams. Easily the two best teams of the last 15 years in his first two seasons. And then the wheels kind of came off the last season.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, but I mean, look at the players he had to deal with, though. I mean, Cozy Perry got suspended. Jaron Williams got suspended. Jeff Thomas got kicked off the team. Like, there was locker room mutiny. And, you know, if we haven't had that problem, like, almost every year for the last 15 years, I'd blame Richt. But we've had problems with that way before he ever got here.
Yeah.
We had problems with it last year. So I don't blame Mark Richt for that. I mean, I'm not saying he's guiltless, but I'm not going to put most of the fault on him. So I'd really be interested to hear some of the stuff he had to say.
Yeah, he would be a great interview. I love Coach Richt, and a late happy birthday to him.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Coach Richt. Come on the pod.
Happy birthday, Coach. Can you hear us?
And then let's see, the last one. Dude, how cool would it be to have Ed Reed on here? Like, Chief of Staff Ed Reed.
Hall of Famer Ed Reed.
Yeah.
And Chief of Staff Ed Reed, yeah. He would be, that would be, if we ever got him, I say we quit the podcast that day because we can't really get any better.
Yeah, right.
Unless Braxton Berrios, like, followed him.
Yeah.
Best friend Braxton Berrios. But yeah, Ed Reed, I mean, Ed Reed is one of our best friends, too. He's the best friend of all Canes fans. He is the greatest Miami, like the greatest Miami Hurricane.
Dude, when I raise my children, I won't tell them that Santa comes to give them presents on Christmas Day. It's going to be Ed Reed comes down the chimney.
I'm going to tell my son, who I named Braxton, that story.
Yeah. On Christmas Eve, go to sleep so Ed Reed can come down the chimney and give you a national championship.
That's good. That's a
point. You can bring your program back from the dead twice, hopefully.
Don't jinx us now.
I know, right?
Gosh.
Let's see. Okay, I think that's it. Move on to our guest. So let me check our messages.
Will you do the honors of introducing our guest?
Yeah, he's ready. I'm gonna call him.
Yo.
Doug, what's up, brother? How you doing?
All good, man. I figured this out. Not bad for an old guy.
What's going on, Mr. Duck? I'm glad. I can't believe you're on our podcast right now.
Dude, we're on the podcast. I only go on the freshest podcasts. You know that.
Freaking talking about, bro.
So we got our second guest for the day is Better Duck from Twitter. Everyone knows him. Everyone loves him. Well, almost everyone loves him. Some people can't handle the heat. And, yeah, man, thanks for coming on. Love to have you. You're probably one of my favorite Twitter followers.
Awesome. You make thanks. Me laugh
every
it.
Time I see your name.
I appreciate it. I just realized you guys have 4 first names. That's like enough to start an 80s heavy metal band.
That's a very good point. I've never even.
Also, you guys could also go by the name of Jordan Marsh. Which you're too young to remember, but that used to be a high-end department store down here where all the hot chicks bought their jeans in the 80s.
Yeah.
Back when the Canes were good.
Well, let's get into that, Doc. I mean, because you know why I love you on Twitter is because you're harsh, but, I mean, you're always, like, you say the things that no one else has the guts to say. So how are you feeling about this program right now?
I couldn't feel any worse about the program right now. I'm not trying to be over dramatic, but let me just say this right off the top. I've been on Twitter, I think, since November of 2007. I haven't really found many Hurricane fans that have been on there longer than me. And since then, the team has basically stunk. So nobody on Twitter has ever experienced me when we've had a good year.
Fair enough. I mean, did you not consider 2017 a good year?
Up until the slide at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was tough to watch.
And then part of the thing, like, I heard Roman's show. That was great. You guys did a great job with him. And Roman's a smart dude and knows a lot about offense and everything. And I don't pretend to know anything about football other than being a super fan and growing up in Broward County, which is the premier football county in America, not Dade.
Yes. Hey, I'm a Broward County native myself, Doc. Preach.
Right. So, you know, St. Thomas wins the national championship every other year down here. They put the most first rounders in the league. They put the better players in, but Dade gets all the credit because Miami's just a bigger, more vast city. But it's all about Broward. I know winning football when I see it. And what we saw last year was an absolute abomination. I try to live by the sort of the three-word or three-phrase statement, which is run the ball, stop the run, win the kicking game.
We couldn't do any of those.
We didn't really do any of that last year.
That's fireable. Man, I can understand if your kicker gets knocked out of a game and you're unable to try field goals for the remainder of the game. That happens. What I can't understand is going into games afraid to attempt a 30-yarder. And that's what we did. Like, that is losing football. Forget Enos and a sophisticated passing attack and how long the dropback is and how long a quarterback's in the pocket. If you can't run the ball on first down and you can't kick the ball when you need to, you're a horrible, horrible football team.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Doug – oh, go ahead, Marsh.
Well, I was going to ask, Doug, because, I mean – if I remember correctly, you were not a fan of the Manny Diaz hire. I mean, I know that last offseason you were saying, I mean, you were the only one who was saying how 2019 could be a bad year. What kind of gave you that impression, or why weren't you a fan of the Coach Diaz hire?
Well, because I've been through this. We went through this with Butch Davis, who had NFL experience at the time that we hired him. He had a few Super Bowl rings. And we just – when we got Butch Davis – the team made every single mistake it could make. Butch Davis made every single mistake. He started Kenny Kelly over Kenny Dorsey. He started James Jackson instead of Clinton Portis. And in one particular game, you know, he's a panic attack guy, Butch Davis. He called a panicked timeout at the end of the first quarter, thinking it was the end of the half. And it was he lost a fourth down argument with Ryan Clement, where Butch wanted to kick it. And Ryan Clement just basically went out there and lined the offense up. And I think he got the fourth down. But Butch Davis just looked like a fool on the sidelines. Now, yeah. Whatever, 15 years later, Butch is the experienced coach, and he handed Manny his ass. That flopping and all that, the defense dropping back and basically taking away every play that worked against Louisville, that's vintage Butch Davis. Yeah. Like, he just so outsmarted Manny, it wasn't even funny. So the only thing, I didn't have anything personally against Manny or a defensive coordinator. It's just such a tough place to learn on the job. Because the stakes are so high. You just can't fly under the radar for a year and figure it out.
So what's your outlook on Manny? I mean, you kind of just compared him to Butch, and what you're saying definitely makes sense. I mean, but Butch ended up kind of leaving here as a decorated coach. Do you see that possibility for Manny, or what are you feeling there?
Man, it was just such a different landscape, whatever, 20 years ago. When did Butch leave?
2000.
So 20 years ago, it was just such a different landscape. Miami only had like maybe a half dozen powerhouse teams to really worry about. And now they have to worry about 25 of them, including three more schools in the state of Florida that recruit here. And the whole thing basically, yeah, going back to, I heard Rose show, and he's all about the sophisticated passing game with, and a quarterback that can run and throw and all this other stuff. And I'm not against any of that. I'm not against the spread or any of these other things. I think Miami should be able to just line up and play fundamental football and beat most of these teams. They're not going to beat Clemson. They're not going to beat a few other teams. But the rest of the teams on the schedule, Miami should be able to run the ball. And the reason they can't is because of poor recruiting. And if you can't recruit at Miami, then Miami's Vanderbilt or Duke. There's no advantage to being in the South Florida area if you can't get the best kids that are here.
I mean, you're right. You're 100% spot on. And you know, we've really made a string of bad hires that have – I mean, look at our offensive line depth. Or I was just speaking about it right before we had you on, but our cornerback depth, I mean, that comes from recruiting. We're going to have to take – a true freshman safety, Avante Williams, and play him out of position to cover because we didn't recruit the cornerback position very well.
Recruiting cornerback is tough. The way you can negate that is with pass rush.
Yeah.
So they have that.
You know, what kind of blue chip program has to play a true freshman out of position because Nobody. They got their pants down?
Yeah, horrible. Horrible recruiting. It's not all Manny's fault. You know, he wasn't expected to fix it in 1 year, but it's just – it's the recruiting thing is unbelievable. I understand. I kid them a lot and everything that we couldn't get the Bosa boys. Like, that was a huge loss, and they were never coming here anyway. Those two kids are kind of jerks and don't fit the whole Miami mold. But there's other kids leaving here. Yeah. And one thing I've noticed about Miami since the Nevin Shapiro scandal is Miami takes zero risks with recruits.
Yeah.
It's a team full of nerds, and I hate to be mean like that, but every team that's really good has a couple of wild cards on it,
yeah.
And it doesn't have to be a mass murderer. It doesn't have to be University of Florida with 55 arrests or whatever the number is, but you have to have some kids with a little different type of motor,
yeah.
And to do that, you have to take risks, and so far, Miami is unwilling to take risks.
I completely agree with you, Duck. Let me ask you this. What do you think of this Ed Reed hire? Do you think it'll make any difference or what?
Well, like I asked, I don't follow everything as close as you guys do. I listen to a little sports radio or anything. Is he wearing dress pants every day or is he wearing those coaching shorts?
Well, unfortunately, it's going to be dress pants, metaphorically speaking. It's
right. Right. Dress pants for Ed because he dresses like a rock star. I get that. But it can't hurt. You know what I mean? It can't hurt. But if he's in it in an administrative role or whatever, I mean, maybe it'll get a recruit one a year until they figure out what his position is and what he's going to actually do. I don't see Ed being long-term here. They're probably like a 2 or 3 year project. And it can't get worse. I mean, like 3 or 4 years ago when we first lost to Duke, I wouldn't stop on that. And people were like, dude, you're just taking it too far. You got to calm down. It's just one loss. And I was like, yeah, it's one loss, but it's a harbinger of things to come. When you lose to a program like that, and it's not a fluke, you know, any team can lose. You have to look at the way they lost on the field. And the way we lost to Duke and everything, I was like, wow, we just don't have an advantage on the roster anymore. Where Miami could just throw Duke around the field and still turn the ball over a couple times and win by 30. Those days are over.
Yeah, I mean, it's despicable. It's embarrassing. It's pathetic. And then you follow it up by losing to Duke for the second straight year, losing to FIU. It was a disgusting year, and not and there weren't too many of us who really wanted to express how pissed off we were at the program, but there's no need to sugarcoat it. And so are we going to see you at any games at Hard Rock Stadium this year?
I'm probably done going to games. I don't know. I might go to a smaller game. I definitely won't go to one. You know, I'm not no more FSU games for me. I've been to a lot. I've seen a lot of games. That stadium isn't really my favorite. I'm so spoiled, having grown up going to the Orange Bowl every Saturday, that it's tough for me to go to Hard Rock. The last time I went was, I think we were playing FAMU, and we were late, and I forget what it was. It was probably 40 or 50 to park, and I tried to scalp tickets, but there were so many police, you couldn't scalp tickets, and then there was a line at will call selling tickets for whatever face value is on them, which is pretty high. And while we were debating on whether to buy tickets, Ja'Cory threw 3 touchdowns, and basically the game was over in the first quarter. So me and my buddy were like, oh, we're just getting out of here. Like, it's not even worth it at this point.
Yeah.
One other thing, in defense of a little bit in defense of Manny, the games he did lose this year, he lost to North Carolina. That's Mac Brown. That's what, 30 years of head coaching experience?
Yeah.
He lost to who else? He lost to Duke, that David Cutcliffe.
Yeah.
He has a lot of experience. He lost to Skip Holtz has a lot of experience. My buddy Jeff, my fishing partner, played down here at St. Thomas and went to UConn and actually played for Skip Holtz.
Yeah. Well, let's see, who else did he lose to? It would be what's Florida's dude, the guy that we turned down twice?
Dan Mullen.
Yeah. Name is drawn a blank.
So some of the losses, like 4 of the losses, it was about 100 years of experience to 1.
Yeah.
And when the team's not that good to begin with, they're just going to have, you know, crushing defeats like that.
And we got locker room problems. I mean, Manny is – tried to tell us about the locker room problems, but I mean, I feel like he can only say so much from a PR standpoint. But I mean, maybe they're just way worse than any of us think. You know, maybe this locker room was just horrible this last season.
He did that to himself. If everybody knew that kids on the team were partying before the game, you bench those kids and you come out and lose 100-0. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on him. I get it. He probably started some kids that he shouldn't have started. He probably took some kids back on the team that probably shouldn't have been back on the team. But those are rookie coaching mistakes. You know? I remember Butch did the same thing. He threw Santana Moss off the team for a fight early on, very early on. And we were all like, oh, wow, there goes Santana Moss. And then it came out that Santana was breaking up the fight. And then Butch backtracked and put him back on the team. You know, these coaches, they're so under so much pressure, and their decision making, I mean, these guys aren't geniuses. You know what I mean? Butch Davis is not a smart human being. He's a great football coach, but it doesn't take a super high IQ or advanced levels of thinking to be a football coach. You just kind of have to know how to line up.
Yeah. No, that makes sense, man. You're dropping truth bombs, and I think a lot of people don't want to hear them, but, you know.
They don't want to hear him. These are adults that paint their faces on Saturday mornings, go out and put up pop-up tents and chug tequila and wear men, grown men wearing costume jewelry, turnover chains, and...
Sorry, Doug, you got me at that mode, man.
A lot of the guys that don't like me or criticize me, they're cheerleaders.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're still cheering even though the other team's scoring. Kind of like, you know, that big defensive tackle was doing that dance on the sideline. They're not thinking through the whole situation. They're like, you know, I'm a fan, and anything that's critical against the program, I'm going to take personally. So I'm blocked by, you know, a lot of people that – and that's the beautiful thing about Twitter. You follow who you want, and if you don't want to follow somebody, you don't. And there's a lot of people that block me because they don't want to hear that. They want to hear that next year we're going to go 12-0 and, you know, face Bama or Clemson, and we're going to beat them by 40. But yeah. That's not reality.
It's not going to happen.
It's not.
With all due respect, Doug, I hope you're wrong, but you know, I'm not going to say that you are until it's true. So
2020 would be so great if everybody ganged up on me and told me how wrong I was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If everyone was like, yeah, idiot, you said that we're going to do this, blah, 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 I would take it. I hope that happens.
Yeah.
All right. So before we wrap up here, we talked a little bit before this. You've been very involved in what's going on in Fort Lauderdale, trying to, you know, spread awareness about the I'll let you talk about it. But go ahead and tell us about the sewer situation in Fort Lauderdale.
Well, right now it's a Fort Lauderdale problem, but it's happening over the entire state, and it's happened to Miami too. It's just happening to Fort Lauderdale in at disaster levels. Since December, we've had 9 major sewage breaks, which has pumped 211 million gallons worth of raw sewage into the river system here, mm-hmm. which basically nuked and killed everything. And that was a decision that they made to do that. When the pipe broke, they're not going to let it flood the houses. I understand that. They're not going to let it flood the neighborhoods. So what they did was they got pumps, and they made the decision, like, we're going to pump it into the river. Well, other cities and other places around the world have better systems set up where they're able to at least filter it before they pump it. Like, it goes into another truck that gets some of the filtering out of it. And it's such a bad situation here that, you know, Fort Lauderdale is the sport fishing capital of the world. It's also the yachting capital of the world. Mm-hmm. And everyone down here lives on the water, and it's all about boats. And it's disgusting. It smells like a Jiffy John on the water. They've got crews out scooping up dead fish and turds with nets. So yeah. The rich people, like where Nick Saban lived and other people in the rich part of Fort Lauderdale, don't have to see it or smell it. And we've just been putting pressure on the local city down here. And I filmed all of it. You know, I'm a filmmaker. Yeah. So I'm in the process of doing like a documentary on it, not solely just on the sewage breaks, but on Fort Lauderdale in general and how it's changed from, you know, the 50s and 60s and 70s when your parents spring braked here and the way it is now because of development and crumbling infrastructure. Like that main pipe, that main sewage pipe is a 7-mile long sewage pipe that should have been replaced 30 years ago. They raised the money for it. They had it, and they voted to spend the money on something else because it was like, I just hope it doesn't break on my watch. Jeez. And it's just terrible.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, growing up in South Florida, I mean, like you said, you grew up on the water. I grew up just down the road in Hollywood, but I was always boating. All my friends had boats, grew up fishing and everything. And so, I mean, anything that we could do, I know that we're out here on the West Coast, but anything that we can do to help on social media, just let us know, man, and because – that sucks. That's just a shame to hear, man.
It sucks. And thankfully, it made national news earlier in the week. I've been pressuring all the reporters and everything down here and fighting with CNN and Fox. And finally, NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt showed it. It was only like a minute and 15 seconds, but it showed it. And people, relatives of mine and stuff that I don't really talk to, were like, wow, we just saw you guys on the news. Like, how bad is it down there? And you're like, man, if you go in swimming in the water, you're going to die. You're going to get sick.
Jeez. It's heartbreaking, man. That sucks.
Sucks. So we definitely need the Hurricanes to improve and improve drastically to lift our spirits here. It's a it's not going to get fixed anytime soon. It's probably like a 10 or 20 year process of replacing the lines. And then, you know, the nature will fix itself, but it just takes time.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, before we have you go, I'm going to call a little bit of an audible here. But so Marsh and I were going to do a question right at the end of the podcast of our five favorite Miami Hurricanes wins of all time.
During your lifetime.
In your lifetime. And I know I'm putting you on the spot here because we didn't talk about this beforehand. But do you want to give us – I mean, if you can only come up with three, that's fine. But if you can give us five, I want to hear your favorite wins of all time. So just your personal favorite, the ones that you have the best memories with.
All right. Number one is going to be the win over Florida State when Lamar Thomas caught the pass that was kind of like Daryl Langham's pass late in the fourth quarter. I forget which year that was.
92.
The Lamar Thomas catch was so unbelievable. And I tease all the time about the players apologizing. The cornerback took out a full-page ad in the Tallahassee newspaper and apologized for that. Thomas beat him. I'm going to go number two, the Brock Berlin comeback, Florida.
Okay.
I'm going to go three, probably the West Virginia game that – no, I'm going to go 2001 Nebraska there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then after that, the West Virginia game that Tremaine Mack won, I think, on a blocked field goal attempt.
Yeah, blocked punt.
On a blocked punt, which was a pretty big game. And then, I mean, just off the top of my head, the Ed Reed return against Boston College, because it's so great rubbing it in Boston College's face anytime we can because of the Hail Flutie thing and that it ensured that we were going. The stakes were so high, and it looked like that Brom kid was about to pull out the win for Boston College, and that would have been a disaster.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about the greatest team of all time, and, man, if that ball would have popped up in somebody else's arms, we're not talking that.
No, or I mean, yeah. I mean, that's a – yeah, I think, yeah, that was a late November game, and if they can – I mean, they were driving, and if that season could have took a real bad turn real quick.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Well, all right, man. Well, thanks for coming on. Loved having you. This was pretty freaking cool. So.
All right. Let's do it again when the season starts.
And we love you on Twitter, man, and thanks for the support, and we'll definitely have to have you on again, brother.
See you guys.
See you, Duck.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Dude, that was amazing. I freaking love Duck, dude.
Yeah, Duck is Duck's one of the good ones, man. I a lot of people don't like him, but I love him.
Yeah, I think people just take him too seriously. Like, clearly you can tell. I was actually surprised, I have to say. While we were interviewing him just barely, he really surprised me. Like, I think that's when it just kind of hit me. Like, he's grumpy on Twitter because he cares. Like, he clearly knows way more about Miami football than I ever will. So, you know, I think people take him a little seriously and just, I mean, he's heartbroken like all of us that we suck and that we have sucked, you know?
He's just honest. And a lot of fans don't like honesty nowadays. Yeah. They want it to be sunshine and rainbows when really it's just been sewer crap the last 15 years.
Yeah, right. It's been Fort Lauderdale sewage system.
Yeah, and that is also actually a very important topic. Yeah. And that's awesome that he's kind of shouldering that and doing that, because I mean, that's a part of the country that I love very much. I grew up in. I know exactly the river he's talking about, and let's support him whatever way we can.
For sure, for sure. That's a big reason why I wanted to have him on so much, and is, you know, I feel like he's doing good work there, and then, you know, raise some awareness. I know most of our listener base is in South Florida, so you know, hopefully that encourages some people to get involved and do what they can.
No, but yeah, he's awesome. Always love him on Twitter. I would say that he's definitely one of the top three accounts that everyone should be following.
Yeah.
Myself and then you are the two. I mean, all I do is complain like about sports and talk about my candy addiction. And
I love the tweets though when it's like the hot girls that are scantily clad and they're like, what are you thinking about? When you do those tweets, those are your best tweets, man. I love those every single time. I wish I could set alerts for just those tweets.
I like to consider myself as a funny person. Like that tweet I sent the other night when I was hanging out with a girl, and yeah, I mean, not to brag or anything, but I started I don't know how the conversation – I brought the conversation to baseball, and I started talking about the 1996 Yankees. I was talking to her for like 20, 25 minutes, and she didn't say a word. No wonder she hasn't texted me back.
Yeah.
Gosh, I care too much, you know? Yeah. That's the only thing I can talk about. Like, I mean, girls want to talk about, like, political issues. I don't know what the hell you're saying, yeah. You know? Or, like, they want to go – let me ask you this. Let me ask you something. You're from Utah. Do you like hiking?
Nope. I really don't.
Thank you. Isn't it the worst thing in the world?
Yeah, I don't like snowboarding or skiing either.
I hate the snow.
Me too, man.
I hate it.
You know what I did all winter growing up was I played basketball, like, twice a day.
Yeah.
That's all I did in the winter growing up. And
people in my mentions saying, oh, Marshall, you should start hiking. No! I won't start hiking! What are you, nuts? What are you, crazy?
My life has been football, baseball, basketball since the day I was born, and my dad made sure of it. So if it was a nice day, I went out and played catch, or I went, you know, he hit ground balls to me and my brothers, or, you know, we were out playing basketball in the backyard. Like, no hiking for me, no mountains, no snowboarding.
So stupid. You get all sweaty. You can't breathe. You get animals. There's animals that you can die from.
Yep.
Like, last time I went hiking, there was, like, a moose. And I'm like, why the hell am I here?
Yeah.
I don't belong outdoors. But, yeah, my future wife, I don't know who she is or where she is. If she exists, she probably exists. But she's gonna hate.
I got a funny story.
She's gonna hate me because all I ever want to do is just sit on my couch with my dog and watch sports. That's all I ever want to do, and she is going to hate me.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, I feel you. What's
your funny story though?
I just had a flashback to like before one of the high school dances, you know, like all of my friends, they're like, hey, we're going to go up to this spot in the mountains. There's this great sledding, whatever. But we had to hike in the snow a little bit.
Oh, God.
And I've always been a pretty big dude. Like, even when I'm skinny and like, you know, I'm pretty skinny and in good shape and stuff, I'm still like 250 pounds plus.
Yeah.
You know, right now I'm wearing like a 36, 38 jean and I'm like 260, right?
Yeah.
So we're hiking up this mountain and everyone's just like walking on top of the snow. Dude, I'm like 40 feet behind everyone because every two steps I take, I like sink up to my waist almost just in the snow. It was terrible, man. And you know, and after that, I was like, this is the last time I'm ever hiking.
And it sucks because like my whole family, like my dad's a Marine, and, like, he's just all about, oh, we're going to go outdoors and do all these things. And I'm like, I couldn't be further from the opposite. He goes like, oh, I want to go climb Mount Olympus. And for you, like, non-Utah people, that's a big A mountain.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Dad, there's not a shot in hell you would ever – like, are you crazy? Like, I don't get why people enjoy that, you know? I know we're kind of not talking about football, but I think this is why people like our podcast, because we can – I could just start ranting and everything. Yeah. But a story came up. I just had a flashback. I'll never forget. I think it was like my sophomore year, junior year. It was a dance, a high school dance, and it was girls' choice, and they were doing a day activity. And it was the same day as like a Utah football game. And I had to lie to her Because they were like going bowling or something. Like, why are you taking me bowling? I lied to her, said, I have a family issue, and I went to the football game. I don't want to do that. No, it wasn't bowling. It was like outdoor paintball. That's what it was. I'd be all sweaty, and you don't want to see, like, why do you want to see each other? I don't know. I'll probably be single forever because of these reasons.
You know, I would always skip school dances when I was in high school. Up until my senior year, there was a girl that I had a crush on that asked me to do a dance. And then after that, I started going to them. But the first 2 years of high school, all my friends would be gone at dances. And I would, like, I'd put it out there. Like, I'm not going, you know. No girls ask me. I'm not asking anyone. Because that Friday night, it gave me the chance to go to the local Lifetime Fitness and play pickup ball, where it was really good ball. You know, it was like, I don't know. It was really, really good ball at the time, especially on Friday nights. And, dude, I'd live for that. It was like every 3 months that Friday night where I got to go play ball. Oh, man.
See, even me now, like, I will not play pickup basketball with my friends. I will not, because I don't like to show how sweaty I get. I'm very out of shape. And second of all, and third of all, like, I just don't want to do it. Like, I don't want to play against these guys who take it way too seriously. Yeah. I'm like, I just don't care.
Yeah, man. I've always gravitated more to I'm the deep threat, you know, like I don't like to bang down low and pick up ball, because like you said, there's guys that take it too seriously. So I always worked on my three-pointer to the point where I just come off screens and jack them up. And, you know, I've had pretty good success with that in my life. That way I don't have to touch people too much. And you know,
when I stopped playing like high school sports and everything and I moved on, it was just such a great day, because then I realized I don't have to do anything active for the rest of my life. I'm done. Like, I'm good. I got nothing else to do now.
If I were to do that, dude, I'd be 400 pounds right now instead of 250.
I don't know how I'm not just severely overweight, because my eating habits, like, they are so horrendous.
Yeah.
Like, my mom always just asks, Marshall, you're ordering DoorDash for the third time today.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
Good thing that there's no good food here in Utah.
I could complain, but, you know, I'm fortunate in that, like, when I start going back to the gym and getting in a routine, like, by the end of the second or third week that I've been lifting, you can, like, visibly see that I've been lifting.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a bonus. It also comes with the fact that I put on, like, fat and weight like that as well. You know what I mean? So I just – my body just shows whatever I've been doing, you can see it very plainly. So.
I just don't care anymore. Like,
yeah, I don't blame you, man. That's
I just want to sit at home in my sweats, in my hoodie.
Once I get married, I'm flicking that recliner chair. You know,
On my honeymoon, like, my wife's gonna be like, oh, let's go do extravagant things, like, let's go hiking or swimming in the ocean.
Yeah.
And someone got mad at me. Are you? I know. I keep, because I like talking about this stuff. Do you like the beach?
I don't like the ocean, but I do like the beach. I don't like getting in the ocean.
I don't like the beach anymore. I grew up in Florida, and like, I loved the beach, and like, I was there in October, and I realized, I don't like it.
Yeah.
Sand.
I've been to beaches in California. I've been to beaches on Hawaii, on multiple islands. And then I've been to the beach in near Nassau in the Bahamas. And never really had a great experience. I like sitting out at the beach, especially, you know, in Southern California with homies and, you know, throwing frisbee or a football and, you know, drinking cold soda or whatever and just having a good time talking to girls. That's fun. But, dude, the ocean smells bad. Like, and
it's cold. Yeah. And there are giant things in there that want to eat you.
Yep. So, you know, I maybe this trip down to South Florida that we do in April, maybe that'll change my mind.
I don't know who you're going to go to the ocean with. I'm not going to the ocean with you.
All right. Fine, then. I'm going to call up my dude, Doug. I'm like, hey, Doug, take me to the beach.
Yeah. I'm just going to be at my pool or on my couch. See, that's the thing. I go on vacations, and I, all I want to do is just, I just want to, like, me and my friends, we took a vacation to South Florida a few years ago. All we did was sit on our couch and watch the baseball playoffs. It was wonderful. And all the girls that we went with, they were like, get your ass off the couch. Let's go do something. What, like, what the hell? We flew all the way to Florida. And I'm like, well, this is a vacation to me. Okay.
And dude, it was your house. You should say
it's my house.
Do not talk to me like that at my house.
Yeah, go get me some candy.
Yeah.
All right. Should we do this top five win thing?
Well, hold on. I got another question real quick.
Oh, go ahead.
Dude, I have a fear of reptiles. All right.
Big fear.
I've always been afraid of going to, like, South Florida and getting eaten by an alligator.
Yeah.
So go ahead, educate me right now, because I've only been to Orlando, I've only been to Disney World, but educate me on the alligator situation. If I swim in your
pool, they're everywhere.
Spring, is there going to be an alligator in there?
Where? Wait, where?
In your family pool.
There's not going to be an alligator in my family pool. There might be iguanas, because they're overpopulating the area. There's iguanas everywhere, but I don't know. They won't kill you. But no, there's alligators everywhere. They're freaking running around like mice. I mean, we may go to the Everglades and see one of those. But they are huge, man, and they scare the crap out of me. But you know what you got to do? You just got to run in zigzags.
They're horrifying, though, because they're faster than humans, and they will bite your leg off.
Yeah, and your arm, and kill you.
Yeah.
I know. I hate alligators. I hate snakes. I'm like Indiana Jones. I hate snakes. Like, they're the worst things on earth. I don't know why they're living. That is my greatest fear. They're a reptile, right?
Yeah.
They're part of that family. But yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I hate them. I hate alligators. They are everywhere. They're going to start overpopulating the area too.
Just round all of them up, dude. Just put them all in a big hole and then push a big pile of dirt on top of them.
Yeah, my God, that was dark, Jordan.
Let's throw all the reptiles in there.
I'll just drop them on BYU's campus.
Yeah, right. Dude, so actually, have you eaten iguana before?
No. I'm not.
It's not bad, dude.
Oh, my God.
I lived in Mexico for a little bit, and iguana was a delicacy where I was. It was a very popular choice of meat, and it actually is not bad.
Yeah. Okay.
It kind of tastes like alligator, actually.
I've had alligator. Alligator's not bad.
No, yeah. Alligator's good.
You need to get your frog legs. Frog legs are good.
No, thanks, dude. No,
they're good. They're actually good, man.
Ah, fine.
Hey, you said that you're looking to get some of that South Florida delicacy.
Is that a thing? I mean, there's a really good Cajun restaurant, Logan, of all places, that will fly in some exotic. Dude, I'm serious. If you stop through Logan, go to Mamo's. It's like, it's legit Cajun food, and it's freaking good. The dude is from Baton Rouge, like, huge LSU fan. And he'll fly in, like, frog legs and make frog legs for the special, or, you know, like rabbit, jambalaya, you know, just exotic meats and stuff.
That's interesting. I ate a lot of Cajun food, but I like Cajun food.
I ate a lot of alligator when I was in college in Logan, Utah. And it was prepared by the most amazing man that I've ever met from Louisiana. The only man that I've met from Louisiana, but still.
Huh. Maybe I'll have to try it.
Yeah. Anyways, let's get to this. We're probably boring the heck out of people, dude.
No, people love this.
Yeah, well, everything we touch turns to gold.
It's true. Yeah. Okay. All right, top five wins.
Okay.
And people who are listening, keep in mind, Jordan and I, like, we weren't there for the 80s, 90s, 2001 season, okay? So this is we are younger Canes fans, okay? Yeah. So don't be in our mentions complaining and saying, "Oh, you guys are just new fans." So shut up, everyone.
I think it's impressive that we're new fans. We've never seen anything special, and we're still here.
We are still here. Yes. Yes. That's a very good way of putting it.
I mean, you're going to see my list of top five wins. You're going to be like, wow, That's three of them were from like 2 years ago. Like, that is a sad existence.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Number one.
My number one, and if you have the same one, then let's join in and talk about it together. So let me know if you have the same one.
Okay.
So for number one, I don't have mine in any particular order, unless you want to do them in order or no.
I don't have any order.
Okay. I'm going to go in chronological order then for mine.
Okay.
2009 FSU.
Yep.
That's awesome. One where Ja'Cory Harris threw that last second pass, or, you know, late in the game. Wasn't that on a Monday night on Labor Day?
It was on Labor Day. It was in Tallahassee.
Yeah.
And FSU was ranked. We were unranked in Ja'Cory. I think it was 386 passing yards. I don't know why I know that. But yeah, he hits Travis Benjamin on the opening drive for a touchdown. And then on the last drive, I'll never forget it because it was a play action. And he hit Travis Benjamin in the corner. It wasn't a touchdown, but it was down to the 1 yard line. And it was the greatest throw I have ever seen. Ever.
Wow. Yeah, ever. Man. That was big. I mean, that was a year. That was one of those days where everyone knew that I was the school Miami fan. You know, that would have been my sophomore year of high school.
Yeah. And then FSU drives and last play of the game, Christian Ponder throws it and it's caught, or they think it was caught. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's a touchdown. FSU won the game. I'm so pissed. And then I hear my dad in the background, wait. Yeah. It was incomplete. And I was going nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I remember that. The next day at school, everyone was talking to me about it. You know, it was good stuff. And I, that was like the first taste of sweetness that I had. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's crazy that it took so long, but that was some rough times before then.
Yeah.
Okay. So is that on your list?
Yes, it is.
Okay. One for one then. So the next one I have is 2013 Florida.
That is also on my list.
What a good freaking game, man.
That was a good day. I remember I was at Utah State and I was in that big – I was in the school gym. You know what I'm talking about. And I was watching it and I was just celebrating and everything. It was also the day I had like my initiation party for my fraternity. And so it was just a really great day. And I remember I was just so pumped because I had a feeling coming up like the week leading up. I'm like, you know, I really think that we could beat Florida. Like, I think, like, we had Stephen Morris, we had Duke Johnson, and I just remember the defense forced, like, 6 turnovers on Jeff Driscoll, and Tracy Howard had a really big interception that game in Miami territory. What a great day.
Wasn't it Denzel that put his hat on the ball and it just went flying up into the air?
Yeah.
Was that Denzel that forced that fumble?
I don't know if it was Denzel, but, yeah, and then Duke takes it in for the clinching touchdown. I was hyped.
Dude, that was a great day. That was a good year, you know.
Until week 7, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of was talking about that on my blog. Like, we went 7-0, and then just mentally weak. I don't know what it is, dude. We'll have to get more into that.
Because ankle, that's what it was.
Yeah, but I mean, how many times in the last 10 years have we lost one big game, usually to Florida State? And then the team just mopes around for the next 3 weeks, and we go on a 3 or 4 game skid.
Every single year in the past 10 years?
That's what I'm saying, dude. We're going to have to get more into that, because that is, like, to me, that's mental weakness. That's a team that is full of entitled kids, and they lose, and they're not used to losing, and you know what I mean? They're not used to people being mad that they did something wrong. And, I mean, I don't know what it is. Maybe I just sound like a grumpy old man, but I mean, that's been our fatal flaw, dude.
Yeah,
Just kidding. Anyway, okay, so it's on your list as well, right?
Yep, that's on my list.
Okay, and now 2017 FSU.
Yep, that was and I have a story to go along with each one of these games. Hope you don't mind. 2017 FSU. Oh my, that is number one on my list. That was one of the greatest days of my life. I was in South Florida. I was watching it with all my friends. We all took a fall break trip down to Utah or down to Florida, and I was watching it at Capone's Flicker Light on Hollywood Beach. We'll take you there, Jordan. But I exploded. The chair fell over. I was hugging and crying at dude Langham's catch.
Yeah.
When FSU scored to take a 2017 lead, I was depressed, suicidal, Marsh. I was done. I was like, I can't believe this stupid team dragged me through this again. And then Braxton Berrios, my best friend Braxton Berrios, comes up with a few good catches on the drive, and then we hit Langham, and I couldn't. I like still to this day, I can't believe that game happened. I was so happy. I cried. I cried tears of happiness.
Yeah, man, that was one of the best days of my life. Yeah. I just could not believe it. And then, you know, for him to follow it up and do it again against Georgia Tech, like, hats off to Darryl Langham, man. Like,
I would love to get him on the show.
Dude, that would be great. Let's.
Just for 30 straight minutes, I would just keep saying, thank you, man. Thank you.
Dude, I'd love to get him too. Him or like Malik Rozier would also be great.
Yeah,
dude. So if you're listening, Darryl Langham, hit us up, dude.
Our followers should tag Malik Rozier and Darryl Langham.
Yeah. So, go ahead. Yeah, do that. And then, you know, followers. Also probably going to bother them a little bit. So,
yeah, I just want to just say, hey, guys, it's just us. Okay.
Thank you for being a streak buster, you know.
Yeah. Thank you
for rescuing our program from
7 years of hell.
Yeah, you know, we were on the verge of becoming little brother there.
Oh, I hate them.
Me too, man.
I hate them
so. Okay, so next is 2017 Virginia Tech.
That is not on my list.
Okay, so this was the game. To me, this game was very symbolic, and unfortunately, it didn't end up meaning anything because we're terrible again.
Yeah.
But to me, this was the game because it was prime time. Both teams were ranked. This was the game where I went into it and I said, in my lifetime experience, Miami does not win big games. Like, if we are playing a ranked opponent on national television, primetime, network TV, we are screwed. Because in my lifetime experience, we had lost almost every single one of those games. Virginia Tech was the first time that didn't happen. And so that was huge for me. That was like a turning point. I was like, holy crap, we can win big games now. We have Mark Richt. We're back to being a blue chip program. We're winning big games now. So, I mean, to me, that was just, it was everything, dude. I could not have. And, I mean, didn't the FSU win happen earlier in the year than that?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That was
so.
And Virginia, so, the first weekend of November.
Uh-huh. So those emotions building off of, you know, beating FSU and being ranked so high, and man, I just it felt like a turning point for the program.
The turning point was the week after.
I know that's last on my list. I'm setting the stage right here for that last one, which is the best day as a Hurricanes fan that I've ever had.
Yeah, that this is both on our list. 2017 Notre Dame.
Yep.
What a
good day, man.
I'll never forget it because all my friends, we were doing like a big group date night thing. I don't know why. I mean, I don't like that kind of stuff anyway. But I text my friends, sorry guys, like I'm batting down the hatches, like we got Notre Dame this week. It's number 3 against number 7, we're undefeated. And all my friends know how big of a fanatical, insane Canes fan I am, so they all understood it. And my dad made gumbo, and we got about 2 or 3 noise complaints, just me, my dad, and my brother that game. When Braxton caught that touchdown, and then when Bandy picked, I went into that game thinking like we didn't have a shot. But I was actually interning at KSL Radio that semester, and for the BYU sports program, and They had me on their show that morning against on Saturday morning, and they're asking me, like, how do you think Miami's going to do? And I'm like, oh, well, I actually think that we could pull something out. And they're like, oh, no way. Notre Dame just has a crazy running game, and you don't have a shot. And I'm like, okay. And then I got, like, 10 texts during the game saying, oh, man, you were right. That game was, like, wow. That that game really happened. Like, that wasn't a dream.
Dude, it was the most magical 3.5 hours of my life. It really was. Like, I have no problem saying that.
I was floating.
Yeah.
It was like I just got injected by Mickey Mouse's magic potion. And
it's like the perfect day for me, because like I was at college at Utah State. I was rooming with one of my best friends in the world. Super cool kid, and he doesn't really care about college football at all. But he knew what was happening, you know. He kept track of Miami enough just because he's a good friend.
Yeah.
And, so he surprised me by he lived in a small town like 30 minutes away in Brigham City, and his parents have this super cool house. So he plans all this stuff. Like, he invited me down to his parents' house in Brigham, where they have this big theater room, and he had pizza and like Mountain Dew there. And it was like just me and him, you know, and we watched the game and then went out and his house is right on this really pretty river. So and then we went out and built a fire on the river, and it was just like me and, you know, he's one of the best friends I've ever had. So, dude, it was just, wow. It didn't get that much better. So shout out to him too, if you're listening, brother.
Trajan Bandy.
Yeah. He really, you know, my buddy, but then also just that 2017 team, man. That was wow. It makes me want to cry tears of joy, like you said. What a good day.
Yeah, what a good 10 weeks.
Yeah, dude. And then we went 13-16 since then.
Yeah. So is that your last game?
Yeah, that's number 5 for me.
Hey, my last game is 2018 FSU. Story behind this. So me and two of my friends, my roommate right now actually, and then another one of my friends, we flew down for that game. It was on my birthday, okay? And we fly in, we take a red eye from Salt Lake Thursday night. We get in Friday morning, like at 5 o'clock in the morning. We hang out all night in Fort Lauderdale. So I'm on about 2 hours of sleep in the past 2 days. We tailgate all day and we go to the game. We have great seats, 15th row in the end zone. And, 27-7 lead gone. And the comeback. That game, when Pinckney got that interception, I broke my chair at Hard Rock Stadium just because I was standing on it the entire second half. My voice was gone, but that game was the greatest, one of the greatest days of my life. I was so happy and just so, I felt like I had played the game, because at the end I was just so physically and emotionally exhausted that I just can't wait till November 7th till I go to that game again.
Yeah, man. I was working at a hotel that year of college, and so I only got to see very little of that game because it was a super busy night. So I was working front desk and handling a sold out hotel by myself. So I only saw a little bit of that game, unfortunately.
Well, know that I had a great night.
Well, good for you, man.
Oh, man.
Just kidding. All right. Well, we should go. We're at like an hour and 40 minutes almost. So
great episode.
Yeah. Wow. I hope you guys don't mind. It was a little longer.
Thank you to Jeremy Branham and also Duck for coming on. Those were two great interviews, and working on some stuff to get other guests on next week. So
yeah.
Thank you.
Hopefully find some sponsors here soon. So
that'd be. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, we got to get on that. So, that's all I got, Jordan.
Yeah, that's all from me, too. So, anyways, thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Definitely continue to be interactive. So tell us what your top five wins are. Keep sending me recommendations for South Florida. Just everything. Keep being yourselves. We love you guys. Go Canes, right, Marsh?
Go Canes!
Go Canes!
This has been the Forza Podcast. Remember to like,